You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
What is going on, everyone? It is Tuesday, October 29th here. Sports Talk will roll in till 7 o'clock this evening. Then it'll be the Saints Hour with Mike Haas, Mickey Loomis. Their guest this evening will be Mason Tipton, Saints wide receiver, and also former Saint and Carolina Panther, Jake DeLone.
And Louisiana Raging Cajun.
There you go. Got to throw that in for sure. Then it's 8 o'clock tonight, the first installment of Pelicans Weekly, where head coach Willie Green will sit down and discuss all things birds. And then we're going to get ready for some Pels action, Charlie. We got a game tonight, pregame coverage starting 8:30, 9 o'clock tip-off against Golden State, a back-to-back in Golden State. So this will be the first matchup against the Warriors this evening. Now, both teams go into this game 2-1 on the season. We're going to get more into that with NBA writer Ali Cosell after the first break. But the Pels right now, we were rolling along until last game in Portland. Didn't get to see much of it except some of the highlights because of a Saints game going on, but man, oh man, not a pretty performance from the Pellies last time out in Portland. They need to rebound in a big way, and I mentioned in the triple option segment that the Warriors dealing without Steph Curry, so they are a big man down there, definitely a sniper, not going to be in action for both games on tonight or tomorrow against the Pellies. He's expected, Steph Curry, that is, to be back in the mix on Friday as he deals with an ankle issue, so I guess a little bit of injury luck, you could say, there for the Pels not having to deal with Steph.
Tons of injury luck there. I mean, because I think he's not going to be out long-term, but he's out for this week.
Right.
They said they're reevaluating him on Friday.
Exactly.
Which, look, man, the Pels play tonight and they play tomorrow. And then they don't need to worry about Golden State
for a while. Problem, right.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, you know, when we were talking with Jake Madison and other, you know, Pelicans podcasters and writers, they were saying, look, if they can go 3-1, it's a big win. Granted, I think this was before we found out about the Steph Curry news. This four-game road trip, you were expecting to get off to potentially a 2-0 start against Portland, just because Portland's going to be one of the bottom feeders in the Western Conference.
Right, a young team rebuilding.
Right. At the same time, you didn't play well in Portland, in all honesty, in either game. You came away late with a big come-from-behind victory on Friday, but in that second game, I mean, you were never really in it. So yes, the Pelicans need to play better basketball, obviously, even without Steph Curry on the floor, because that Portland team wasn't very good, Steve. And the fact that they struggled with him is not the greatest sign.
Yeah, and I think Zion Williamson struggled last game, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't an easy evening for him in Portland. Day of rest, getting back in action today against the Warriors. And it's going to be a tough one for the Pels, obviously, back-to-back nights. At least they don't have to travel anywhere. They'll be able to, after the game, go back to their hotel room and rest up for the next game, because those back-to-backs where you have to travel and then play the next day somewhere just seem awfully ridiculous to me. And I know all teams have to do that in the NBA, but definitely one of the tougher things, I feel like, when you're, you know, back-to-back games in different locations. I was saying, Charlie, that luckily this evening the Pels will play at Golden State, and then tomorrow it's right back in the same spot, so you're not at least traveling.
Yeah, two, like, doubleheaders.
It was really odd.
It is pretty strange, but at the same time, it's not the worst thing in the world. And you've seen that happen where they've played, like, the Lakers and the Clippers on kind of back-to-back nights, so it's different teams, but they stay in the same place. It kind of limits the travel, so that's obviously nice. But, yeah, I mean, you're hoping that you can pick up a back-to-back sweep against this Golden State Warriors team, because like you're mentioning, Steve, they have to deal with this back-to-back just like the Pels do. Now, the Pels are probably a little bit more banged up as far as quantity, right? Where you're missing Trey Murphy and DeJounte Murray for this upcoming doubleheader, whereas, you know, the Warriors missing, just Steph Curry.
Yeah, just
one of the greatest shooters, if not the greatest shooter of all time. So,
looking at some of the news from today around sports, the one that I think most interesting to Saints fans, they're playing the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, and Carolina makes a move, trading Deontay Johnson to the Baltimore Ravens, and they don't get anything player-wise back in return. So the Ravens send a fifth-round pick to the Panthers for Johnson, and Carolina's sixth-round selection also goes to Baltimore in the move. So there's something there where you're already seeing the Carolina team having won just one game this season. They're 1-7. Kind of look like they're going to be obviously a seller with that trade deadline approaching. Deontay Johnson already let go. Curious to see what other moves, if any, that the Carolina Panthers end up going through. But we've heard from Dennis Allen, Mickey Loomis, the Saints don't plan on being sellers at all right now, despite being mired on this six-game skid and falling behind everybody in the pack in the NFC right now. They're still, you know, going forward and maybe be looking to improve a team. And I think, you know, Mickey Loomis or Dennis said, you know, never say never, but right now they are not in the market. They are not actively shopping anyone right now, Saints fans.
I wonder if they see the market as well. It feels like it is not at all a seller's market. You know, a lot of these pieces that are getting sold off.
Right.
And premium wide receivers like Amari Cooper and Davante Adams and now Deontay Johnson, the latest guy off the board.
So we're just the fifth round pick, right?
They're not going for anything. So, I mean, for the folks that do want the Saints to sell off, like, I mean, you're going to get a day three pick for some of these players? Is that really game-changing?
I think, sadly, a lot of folks, and I honestly, I get it, Charlie. I hate to say that I do, but right. you want to just, at this point, put in the worst possible effort to get the best possible draft pick. And right now, you know, you're looking through the numbers that are coming out right now and in the standings. The Saints would currently have, if the season ended today, the sixth overall selection. Obviously, the Carolina Panthers back at number one.
Yeah, and what will they do at that point? I don't even know. As far as the Saints selling, D.A. said it last night, Steve.
Right.
Flat out said it. We're not selling. And I'll be interested to see. Mike Haas is going to be coming on here in about 45 minutes, talking with Mickey Loomis, if he asks him the same thing. The trade
deadline
is coming
up. Yeah, I'm sure that'll come
up,
right.
And I'm sure Mickey's probably going to say the same exact thing that D.A. said, is that they're not selling. So it's just not going to happen. They're trying to figure out how to win some football games. And as you mentioned, starting off against the 1-7 Carolina Panthers, the team with the worst record in the NFL. And we'll obviously do a lot more preview them on them as the week kind of goes by, Steve. But there's a reason they're 1-7. They're bottom three in scoring offense, and they're worse, the worst, 32nd in the NFL in scoring defense. So, I mean, you can kind of do the math, I would say. The fact that they're, you know, bottom three in both scoring offense and defense, that they're a pretty bad team. If you can't come away from Carolina with a victory, okay, we've got some really, really severe issues.
You know what bothered me, obviously, last season with the Saints? They're not being in the playoffs once again. But you look at the numbers at the end of the year, and I really double-checked everything, I remember, because you're looking, they had a top-10 scoring offense and a top-10 scoring defense last season, and yet were only able to come away with that 9-win year. It just didn't make sense to me.
It was an anomaly, and that felt like the year, right?
And the turnover margin was great.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of things went in your favor, and that's why the Saints were such an anomaly to a lot of folks outside of New Orleans. But even here, like, people don't really understand what went wrong. But I mean, this season right now, with the 2-6 start, the 6-game losing skid, we've been saying stop the bleeding for a long time now. And if you don't say it, or if you don't stop the bleeding against this just awful Carolina Panthers team, I mean, at what point are you going to pick up a win?
I don't know if we're going to get too much into it. Obviously, we got Ali Cosell coming in after the break and then talking some more Saints stuff. But, man, oh, man, the World Series tonight, we could have the end of baseball season, the Yankees getting torched by these Dodgers, and definitely been impressed. Obviously, their bats have been more clutch for L.A., and the fact that the pitching has come up immense. And I mentioned in the triple option segment, and everybody knows they've been talking about the lack of production for Aaron Judge. It just boggles my mind that a guy everybody considers in the league, in the running, if not the favorite for league MVP, just struggling so much in the postseason. You mentioned that, though, this is nothing new. It seems like whatever we get done with the regular season baseball, something happens with Judge.
It happens every year. And this is the time that he made it to the World Series, and it just hasn't changed, Steve. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, every series I kept like, this is when he's going to snap out of it. All right, he's going to jump out of this slump now, and it just, he's been mired on it, and it just completely looks lost at the plate, which you haven't seen from Judge at all this season.
It's got to be a mental thing, right? Like, because he's struggled in the past with October baseball, it's a lot more pressure, and you're facing the best pitchers. But as far as the Dodgers go, Steve, it just, I don't know. I hope the Yankees can extend it, but I'm not betting on it. You know what I mean? Like, I could see a sweep happening, and then everyone's just outside of L.A. is just sleeping at this World Series. Fun game one, the walk-off grand slam, but if it ends up in a sweep.
Fun for who?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, It's exciting. We can at least say that. It's an exciting game.
So does Freeman have the MVP right now,
you think? He's running away with it.
Lock, stock, and barrel,
he's
right?
He's got a home run in every game so far, so he's definitely got it. But if it ends up in a sweep, it's just going to be a forgettable World Series, in my opinion.
Yeah, sadly, and everybody was obviously really hyped. You had two of the big cities involved, the two top seeds also going at it. And right now, man, oh, man, just Dodger domination over the pinstripes. Yeah, exactly.
Yawning.
Unfortunately, and it'll be sad to see the MLB season come to end, but the good news, Charlie, is they'll be doing some scrimmages coming up for LSU baseball and the rest of college baseball getting cranked up. So pretty soon, you know what that means? Some D1 baseball guests coming on the air with us.
Our favorites.
Yeah, for sure. Interested, obviously, to see what Jay Johnson does with this Tiger team this year. I think you looking at the roster and on paper, they look like a pretty stacked squad.
I can't wait to see the preseason, top 25 poll pop
right
up. Because, oh boy, Steve, they're going to be good this year.
We're going to get into a team we're hoping ends up being pretty good. Pels are 2-1 right now, going for their third win tonight against the Golden State Warriors. We'll check in with NBA writer Ali Gosell right after the break here on WWL. Be right back.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
What's going on, folks? Getting ready for Pelicans basketball tonight right here on WWL pregame coverage starting 8:30 and tip off at 9 o'clock at Golden State. Also coming up at 8 p.m., we've got Pelicans Weekly where you hear from head coach Willie Green and more. Dipping more into the Pels bucket, going to welcome in NBA writer who covers the Pels, Ali Gosell, to the radio huddle. Ali, how's it going, man? How you been doing?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing great, of course, right? NBA basketball started, so even though the Pelicans lost a couple guys, lost their first game, it doesn't matter. Basketball's back in our lives.
Yeah, I mentioned to you, getting ready for this show, the fact that I didn't get to see much from Sunday dealing with Saints game day and a really rough outing for this Pels squad out in Portland. I'm looking at, Zion Williamson apparently had a really bad night shooting. But overall, what were your impressions for the game? Where did things go wrong with this squad?
Yeah, so it was several things. First of all, the team is still getting through on losing DeJounte Murray after that season opener, right? I mean, there's a reason why they traded for a legitimate point guard over the offseason, because they needed somebody to push that pace and to get the offense in the sets real quick and things of that nature. So we even saw it in that, even though in their win against Friday in Portland, where that first half, again, they suffered through really bad lackadaisical offense. But in addition to that problem, again, like I said, reared its head also on Sunday, they just couldn't stop the Blazers to get from receiving just one shot per possession, right? I mean, they tallied the Blazers, that is, 22 offensive rebounds. The most the Pelicans gave up offensive rebounds in 82 games last year. It was 21 to the Warriors. So they already have beaten that mark, and we're just three games in the season. And it's really the problem, what we talked about all offseason, right? They aren't big enough. They don't have a traditional center. They don't have that seven-footer, at least in the starting lineup. I mean, there's obviously promising hope for Eve Missy. He's developing quicker than I think any of us imagined. But in the meantime, the rest of the team just has to do a better job on the glass. The book's out on them now. So if you're not shooting well and the offense is struggling to create that transition, that quick pace, and you're also giving up multiple shots per possession, that's just a bad recipe. So that, in essence, is what happened on Sunday. Pelicans, of course, then it affected them mentally. You kind of saw a lack of focus. Guys really not, playing that team ball. So it's easy. We know what they need to do. They just can't go through that type of scenario, that formula again.
Looking at the lineup, Brandon Ingram, I think, has been someone that has – I don't know, shown some growth this season. And I know a lot of folks were considering the fact that he might not even be around for this year early on in the offseason, talking about a possible trade. And I don't know, to me, I see more of a integral piece to this team now than I have in the past for just seeing his performance and even the rebounding you mentioned in the last game, coming up with 8 boards, but, you know, 14 points with that. But overall, to me, I feel like B.I.'s game has taken somewhat of a step forward this year.
It has. And look, we heard, right, the words coming out of training camp up in Nashville. B.I. was looking like a dominant version of himself, shooting threes, getting to the rim more. And then we also witnessed that in the first 2 games, right? I believe he averaged 7 threes those first 2 games, was making them at over 50% rate. And also, even in that season opener, got 16 points in the paint.
Yeah.
So he's been doing what the coaching staff, what a lot of fans have been asking for, is don't live in the mid-range. So, yeah, he's off to a good start. And he looked very aggressive, especially in that season opener to me. And again, that's why I keep harping. DeJounte Murray being out, it's going to hurt a little bit, guys. Because, for instance, in that game Sunday, we didn't really see as much of that Brandon Ingram, right? Because he was asked to initiate the offense. So he wasn't catching the ball in spots that he liked and he could quickly operate. He had to initiate the offense, like I said. And, of course, then it's running a pick and roll. And if he wants his own shot, well, he's going to probably pull up in the mid-range because they're going to shade him around the three-point line and not let him get to the rim. So we saw a lot of the problems from last season in that last game. But, no, to your point, though, Charles, when he's been put in a better position, he's looked like a much different player to me.
Ollie, looking at Jordan Hawkins and what you've seen early on from him, I mean, in increased minutes that we all kind of anticipated from him, especially after the showing that we had all heard that he had at training camp at Belmont University and how he was just kind of lighting it up, especially from deep. How good that he's looked so far, already shooting 52.9% from three-point range, but also the volume of shots that he's taking. He's getting a lot of looks early on, and it's obviously contributing to the Pelicans' 2-1 record, 18 points per game. It's pretty solid so far from a young second-year player.
Oh, he's been huge, guys. Look, he came into the league with one of the prettiest jump shots already, right? I mean, there's a reason why people, you know, sometimes mention him in the same breath as, say, a Ray Allen. But the fact that this season, what you're seeing now is a lot more confidence, a lot more, basically a much more decisive player. So he knows what spots he wants to get to. And he's just raising up from whether it's three or pulling up in the mid-range. But it feels like every shot's going to go down. Yeah, he had some hot games last year, right? He clips 30 points, I think, several times. But overall, he just didn't seem comfortable, right? The game was still too fast. But now he knows his spots. He knows his role. And that's to be the guy that's going to basically give you as many points as you need, especially off the bench while Trey Murphy's out. So he's filled that in admirably. And he's even helped on the glass trial. I think we should mention that. What is he averaging over 6 rebounds through 3 games? So he's given you a little bit more than that. In preseason, we saw him getting to the free throw line. And I think he's gotten, you know, was it about 3 or 4 times per game so far in the regular season. So, yeah, everything's ticked up. And that's impressive, like you said, for a second-year guy.
I'm going to knock on wood because I don't want to jinx it, but he has not missed a free throw yet. And the Pelicans obviously have had free throw shooting issues, and we saw that happen, and specifically the second game against Portland. I know that they had some free throw issues, but they still came from behind and won that. And I wanted to ask you about that second game because I don't think the Pelicans, and I think you would agree with me here, they didn't play very well against a Portland team that's expected to be picking in the lottery. But being able to pull off a split, and the way that they pulled off the split coming from behind, and they made the push in the third quarter on that Friday night game, but then it felt like every time they got close, Portland would extend it back out to double digits. And so they enter the fourth quarter, but then they make that run. And that was an issue all last season, Ollie. We covered it basically all year that whenever they were trailing entering the fourth quarter, they just could not figure out a way to come back. 2 games into the season, they figure out a way to come back, and they pull off a big win, obviously highlighted by the Brandon Ingram mid-range jumper at the very end, and then, you know, Herb Jones and Zion Williamson combining for that big block of Anthony Simons. I mean, what does that do early on for a team to being able to pull off a win that you just weren't able to do in a season where you came one win shy of 50 wins? They weren't able to pull off those fourth quarter comebacks, but they did it in game 2 of this year.
Yeah, I think it does plenty. Right. I mean, it was in the back of their mind. They couldn't close games. And yeah, to your point, I think, what were they, 0-24 last season?
Something
when
like
they
that.
Trailed by whether it was 1 point or 100 points, but they lost every single one of those games last year. So to notch a win in that your first opportunity of the season, that's fantastic. And I'm also not disparaging that win either due to the opponent, the quality of the opponent, because every single team in the season begins, you know, with a fresh, clean slate. everybody, you know, largely healthy, right? But you're excited for the new season. So you're going to get everybody's best punch. So even though some of these teams are expecting to be in the cellar, it doesn't matter. I mean, just think about the last few years, how Utah has always played well and tough their first, what, 2-3 months. I think I kind of saw that with Portland, right? I mean, I didn't see a team that didn't care. Look how many times they crashed the offensive glass. So, no, I think it's very important. But what you loved about that game the most is, yeah, the defense was stellar. But what you really liked is that Zion Williamson kind of struggling with his shot. We mentioned that at the top of the show. But it was the fact that he became a facilitator. I think the reason the Pels were able to go on that run, because, of course, we know, he draws a lot of gravity. So on any drive, he's going to have more than one person, player, collapsing on him. So the kickouts were there. And C.J. McCollum, he hit a couple. Jordan Hawkins hit a couple. And that's, I think, the way the Pelicans have to play. When you don't have DeJounte Murray, somebody's got to be able to get downhill, collapse the defense, and kick out this stable of three-point shooters they have. And we saw that in that second half on Friday's game. Zion's got to be the one to do it. I don't think Brandon Ingram can do it consistently enough, right, because he's not big, he's not strong, and he's not as fast. It's got to be Zion. So I want to see Z, right, get back to scoring 20-plus points on really efficient shooting. But for me, more importantly, this team needs his playmaking. So that's what I'm going to be watching tonight. How well is he facilitating? Because we didn't see that on Sunday.
Ali, looking at this Golden State Warrior squad, what can we expect from them this season? Obviously, no Steph Curry for the next two games against the Pels is a positive. But, man, oh, man, do I got to worry about a Buddy Hield revenge game tonight?
Yeah, look, you might. Honestly, Steve, they've been playing stellar. They went undefeated in the preseason, had a better win percentage, better points differential than, say, even the Boston Celtics or the Thunder. And they began this season kind of on that same streak too, right? Started 2-0, blew out the Trailblazers, and I forget who else. But then, of course, yeah, you mentioned the injuries. Playing the Clippers, Steph Curry twists his ankle in the third quarter. Then they also lost DeAnthony Melton. He won't be available tonight. Expected to miss tomorrow's game as well. And then Andrew Wiggins is going to be out.
Wow,
so
okay.
Suddenly, a team that was relying on a lot of depth, right? Steve Kerr was playing 12 guys. Now they're down to 9, and they're down without the greatest shooter of all time. So I think it's going to be a much different challenge for the Pelicans tonight. They can't relax, but they're not going to get the Warriors' best shot. So this is a break, guys. This is where you can honestly steal two games where typically you wouldn't be able to. Because the Warriors, next to the Thunder, like I said, and the Celtics have been playing the best ball. And suddenly they've really got almost two hands tied behind their back.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of discussion here, Ali, because we were talking with Kurt Heelan, a lead NBA writer for NBC Sports, and he mentioned just and rehashed basically what we've talked about with the Western Conference this year. It's just 1 to basically 13 or 14. It's going to be really, really tight. Razor-thin margins across the board. And this is a Golden State team that, you know, once they get healthy, this is a team that a lot of folks are thinking are going to be in that conversation for the playoffs once you get down there. So picking up 2 wins against them early on, picking up any wins in the Western Conference is obviously huge, but especially against a team that you could potentially be fighting for playoff positioning way down the road would obviously be giant as well.
Yeah, look, I expect the Warriors, from what I've seen in preseason and just to start this first week of the NBA regular season, is I think they're going to be competing right there for a top 6 spot. Their defense has been actually better than most people ever talk about season after season. And here's the other thing. Guess who's leading the rebounding in the league again to start this year? It's the Warriors. They did it last year. They're doing it again. So the best fast-breaking team, the best rebounding team, so they're limiting opponents. They're not allowing you to get to the rim. They're amongst the league leaders again after doing such a good job last season. And of course, they get that 3 ball up. And last year, they shot about 38 per game. Now they're up to 47 three-point attempts per game. They're playing exactly the style that I think, honestly, Willie Green wants to play. Like, you play fast, you shoot a lot of threes, limit opponents from getting to the rim, and transition. And they do it better than any team. So you watch this game closely. Like, they don't have overwhelming size, but watch how they box out. Watch how they don't allow you to get to crash the offensive glass. That's the way the Pelicans need to play.
And then, Ali, before we let you run, the end of this 4-game road trip is going to be on Wednesday with that second back-to-back against Golden State. But then they come home for 4 straight games.
Woo-hoo.
And I want to get an early, early, early preview of what you've seen so far from Indiana. I know, you know, coming off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance last year, there were high hopes heading entering the season. But after last night when I watched Cullen, our assistant producer, texted me, he's just like, look at what Paolo Banchero is doing right now for the Orlando Magic. And when I checked it out, he just put a 50-piece on the Indiana Pacers to drop them to 1-3 on the early season. But what have you kind of seen from them, the Pelicans' next home game, which is going to be this upcoming Friday?
I feel like I'm seeing a little bit of a hangover, right? It reminds me of how the Hawks, what was it, about 4 years ago, right, streaked all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. They beat Philly, where, remember, Ben Simmons famously decided not to shoot a layup, passed it out. Philly lost that series. Then the Hawks went on to beat the Knicks. And then, of course, since then, they haven't done anything. The Pacers last year, same thing. Got to the Eastern Conference Finals when nobody expected. Maybe it was somewhat fortuitous, that journey. But this year so far, they haven't looked like that team from last year. And more to the point, Tyrese Haliburton, he hasn't looked like that 30-point scorer that is also going to get you about 12 assists. Right? He hasn't been that superstar player. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I've only caught a couple of games, but Benedict Mathurin's back. But yet for some reason, Carlisle in the last game only played him 14 minutes. So it seems like a team that's not on the same page, right? They're very disjointed. So I think it'll be an opportunity for the Pels, right, to get another win, maybe their second, or it should be, right, their second at home. And then, of course, you got the Hawks coming in after that. So there's some winnable games, I feel like, once you take care of business here in San Francisco.
Ollie, do you know if we're going to see the return of the Skeleton uniform this season, or is that just last year?
It's a new one, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, it's a different one. But okay. The theme, the Skeleton, all that is going to stick around. But, yeah, different colors and such from what I've heard.
Okay, great, because it was just my birthday yesterday. Mom bought me a new pair of sneakers, and they got that Skeleton, you know, that city color scheme, basically, with the black and that green. I was like, oh, I'm going to match them now. And then I was like, wait a minute, are they going to have those unis this year? No. Ollie, appreciate your time.
No, not the exact ones, no.
Gotcha.
I can't wait to see what I've been hearing, though. They're still going to be nice.
Yeah, always looking forward to seeing the different uniforms the Pels had. I really like the city ones last season, and the Mardi Gras ones have been on point, too. Always appreciate your time, Ollie. Enjoy the game tonight and be talking to you soon.
Thanks, Ollie.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your night.
Go Birds. We're going to take a break. Be back with more sports talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Well, who dat's? Me and Charlie are going to need you on Sunday. We have a 8 a.m. pregame coverage starting for the matchup against the Carolina Panthers. Time for the Saints to check in with us. So join us on Sunday, 8 a.m. We'll be doing that. Then leading up to the Bud Light countdown to kickoff at 10 with the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert. Game time. High noon with Deuce and Hawes on the call. Turn down those TVs and sync up your TVs to hear the Bayou Boys. Then when it's over, sound off on the Ciroc Point after with the Cajun Cannon. Saints and Panthers, 10 hours of wall-to-wall coverage of this premier NFL matchup on Sunday.
We were joking about how Mark Schlereth is that game of the Patriots and the Titans this weekend. I'm like, oh,
right,
that's
rough
tough
one.
But then you look at the Saints and Panthers, it's like the same records.
I'm surprised he didn't say that. It's like, look at the game you guys got to cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking at a game going on right now, we have Tuesday Night Football. What do you know? Louisiana Raging Cajuns taking on the Texas State Bobcats on ESPN2. Right now, Texas State up 3-0. Raging Cajuns 6-1 on the season, 3-0 in conference play. And they got after this game, we'll have Arkansas State, South Alabama, Troy, and UL Monroe to close out the rest of their way. But yeah, it was kind of surprised. You know, I'm talking World Series, talking Pelicans ball, and I'm like, oh man, we got Cajuns football tonight.
Yeah, I was peering up at it as we were talking with Ollie. Steve, I can't lie. And so, you know, the Cajuns defense let up a pretty long drive at the start of the game, but Ben don't break.
There you go.
Hold them to three, and their first drive just stalled out around midfield, so Texas State is getting the ball back after a punt. So 3-0 Texas State over my Raging Cajuns. But as
way
you mentioned,
early.
If the Cajuns win tonight, right, and obviously they've gotten off to a great start in Sun Belt play. Coach Dez looks awesome in his third year at the helm. If they can pick up this win tonight, and they're not favored, by the way, Mike and I talked about that a little bit earlier on. Texas State's favored by 3.5 points, and Texas State has never beat UL.
Wow, okay.
So we got our buddy Jimmy here on the line here. What Southern Miss had done to UL for so many years is what UL has done to Texas State in the Sun Belt. But still, they were favored by 3.5 points. I thought that was kind of curious, but. They were one of the favorites preseason in the Sun Belt, and they've been kind of up and down so far this year. 4-3 record, 2-1 in conference play, and hopefully the Cajuns can pull out a win tonight.
You mentioned Jimmy's on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk in text line. Want to talk some UL Texas State? What you got for us tonight, Jimmy?
Hey man, you caught me coughing, brother.
Sorry.
Yeah, there was one second.
The kids went to the grocery store. I'm eating all the Halloween candy. I got my favorite two candies, candy corn and some Werther's Original. Now, before you call me an 80-year-old grandpa, I love Werther's Originals. I love candy corn, dude.
I can get down with the Werther's.
I gotta give credit.
Candy corn is the most divisive one, dude. It's you either like candy corn or you absolutely hate it. As far as the Werther's Original, that was the first thing that came to my mind. It was just like, you're a grandma.
I'm a grandma. I'm a mama. Like Bobby would say, no, listen, dude, Charlie, I'm calling to give you congratulations. UL is a legitimate team in the Sun Belt in football. They have this very, very steady older quarterback.
Ben Woodard.
He's got a lot of experience. I believe in having an experienced quarterback. You guys are knocking on the door. If y'all beat Texas State, if the Cajuns beat Texas State tonight, I think they're knocking on the door of the top 25. And you guys finally broke the curse with Southern Miss football.
We did.
And after 11 losses, you took us out this year. I told Bobby, I hope Southern Miss goes and gets Coach O. We got an interim coach right now, but I don't know what to say about the Saints. I'm hopeful with the Pelicans, but like Steve said, it's a great time of year. You got Halloween. You got Taylor Swift is over with, thank God. And now we can focus on all the sports all at once for the next month and a half. College basketball, NBA, hockey if you're into it, college football, NFL. I just hope the Saints can stay relevant. I do. You play to win the game.
Right.
If they lose this game, this is where I'm at as a Saints fan, guys. If we lose this game, let's tank for the rest of the year. We should win it. You play to win it, 3-6. I still feel like there's still a chance with Derek Carr coming back. Maybe you make a run. Maybe you sneak into the playoffs. Maybe. But if they lose this game, like you guys said, it's tank out. You got to tank the rest of the season. And that's where I'm at on that. What's your take on that?
2-6 is already a deep hole. 2-7 with a loss to the Panthers
Forget
is a
by.
Seismic
right.
canyon-sized hole. As far as the Cajuns go, real quick, I want to make one last comment about them. Because I think that a couple of pollsters, if you look at the AP Top 25 poll by voter, a couple folks already have the Cajuns as a borderline Top 25 team. If they can walk into San Marcos and pick up a win against Texas State, which they've done throughout their history, not only are they going to be in the top 25, they're in the driver's seat for the Sun Belt West, make it to the Sun Belt Championship, and then you kind of enter that conversation as far as one of those top group of five teams.
Yeah.
Because right now it's like Boise is up there. Tulane's entering that conversation, even with the two losses with Kansas State and Oklahoma. They've been playing outstanding football in Coach Summerall's first year there. But the Cajuns are right up there too. Now, the Cajuns lost the head-to-head with Tulane, which is probably going to mean something down the stretch. But just the fact that they're back to playing meaningful football is so fun as a UL grad.
As for the Saints, though, I was shocked to hear someone like Jimmy still has some positivity about the black and gold right now, because I'm sure you know Charlie, too, from either talking to your friends, family, text messages, social media. It has not been pretty out there.
Yeah, I mean, a six-game losing skid speaks for itself.
Hard to say anything positive, right?
Exactly. And I mean,
the best thing is we're getting healthier.
I mean, Steve, how many times can we keep saying, like, oh, you got to stop the bleeding. You got to win this game. You got to win this game. Like, this is a must win. This is a must win.
We're gushing here.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, beat the worst team in football. And if you don't, then you're among the worst teams in football. So that kind of speaks for itself.
We're going to take a break when we get back. Closing out Sports Talk and then get ready for the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis, coming up right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Be right back. Want to remind everybody about myself and Jeff Nowak, Saints Sideline Reporters podcast, Inside Black and Gold. The New Orleans Saints couldn't end their skid out in L.A., and the difficult questions are only just starting for this team. So what went wrong? Jeff Nowak and myself break it all down to see who stepped up, who fell flat in that Week 8 loss to the Chargers that stretched the losing streak to 6 in a row. And then we'll get into a live viewer mailbag. Check out Inside Black and Gold podcast, available wherever you get your podcast in. Pretty big fun night we got going on. Obviously, the World Series could be a deciding game for the LA Dodgers this evening. They're looking to sweep the Yankees in four straight. But right here on WWL, we've got the Saints Hour coming up next with Mike Haas and Mickey Loomis. After that, going to hear from Pelicans head coach Willie Green on Pelicans Weekly. The first edition of that, we'll be having that also weekly here on WWL now that the Pels are part of our station. And 8:30. Pelicans, Golden State, pre-game coverage will start, and then another late-night tip-off, 9 p.m. hoops, folks, right here on WWL AM and FM this evening. Hoping the Pelicans can get back in that win column, and, Golden State Warriors back-to-back night, so can we get two against a Steph-less squad?
It's not just Steph. Without Andrew Wiggins as well, like, the Warriors are down some pieces. This is a night, You know, the Pelicans early on
take
in the season.
Take advantage.
Get to 3-1. Get to 4-1. Pick up some wins against some Western Conference foes that you're going to be jostling with for positioning way down the road. So, I mean, it's always nice to have the tiebreakers, right? So pick up these big wins against an undermanned Warrior squad. It's going to be huge.
We'll be back with more sports talk tomorrow, folks. Thanks so much for listening. For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. And Mike Dettelier, have a great evening and be talking to you soon. Have a good night.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.